This episode of Access Utah was first broadcast the beginning of this year in January.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Poets get to the heart of what we're thinking and feeling, so we've established a tradition on this program. Each year, about this time, we look back and look ahead with poetry. This year, we'll feature conversation with and poetry from Utah Poet Laureate Lisa Bickmore, along with poets Danielle Dabrowski and Olivia Dudding Rodriguez. Lisa Bickmore is Professor Emeritus of English at Salt Lake Community College. In addition to being Utah's Poet Laureate, Danielle Dabrowski is an Associate Professor of English and Creative Writing at Southern Utah University, where she directs an eco-poetry and place writing conference. Olivia Dudding Rodriguez is Program Coordinator at the Rural Tech Initiative at USU Eastern and Poet Laureate of Helper. So we welcome in Lisa Bickmore again to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. I applaud your desire to begin, and if we consider the beginning to be a sort of capacious beginning, to begin the year with poetry. I love that.
Yeah, it's I love talking to poets. It's you know, something about poetry. We'll talk about that in this hour. So Lisa Bickmore joins us. Danielle Dabrowski, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's also, I'm so excited. It's a great way. I think it's a great way to start a Monday morning, is to talk about poetry.
Wonderful. And Olivia Dudding Rodriguez, thanks for joining us.
I'm so delighted to be here. And what a great way to get things rolling in the winter. You need a little dose of poetry sometimes.
And we're geographically diverse here. I'm speaking to you from Logan, and Lisa Bickmore, Salt Lake area, I'm guessing. And Olivia Dudding Rodriguez in Price. Is that where you are? Yeah. Where we are? Yeah.
Helper. Yeah.
You're in Helper. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Danielle Dabrowski in Cedar City.
Yes. So, yep. I'm here in Southern Utah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Let me start with Lisa Bickmore. Maybe a place to start is people may or may not know that Utah has a poet laureate. I guess most states do. I guess there's still a national one. Lisa Bickmore?
Well, there is the hope of one.
Okay.
Oh, no, there is one. Arthur Shea was named after Ada Limón stepped down after her term. So, yes, we have a wonderful poet laureate, Arthur Shea.
So what does the Utah Poet Laureate do?
So the Poet Laureate's role has shifted a little bit over time. These days, so I'm the sixth one, these days the state looks for a poet laureate who defines a project that will expand the reach of poetry and enhance the lives of poets in the state. And I think of the poet laureate as being an exemplary literary citizen, someone who not only loves poetry and can do poetry, but who brings poetry and expands access to poetry. So for me, my project is what I call a mobile micro press, where I work with poets around the state to produce limited edition chapbooks of their work, so shorter collections. And the project pays for micro editions of 50 copies. So the poets are free to do with those as they like. And we have a digital archive as well, as I've kept a teeny little print archive that I hope someday someone will want besides me. So that's what I do as Poet Laureate, in addition to visiting classrooms and planning the poetry festival that my predecessor, Paisley Rechdahl, initiated, and other assorted things.
You were born in Dover in Delaware, grew up living all over, including Japan.
Yeah. I did. Yeah. My father was in the Air Force, and I was the oldest kid, and so I and my siblings, we moved quite a few times, not as many as some people in military families move, but I did live in Japan. My father was a reconnaissance pilot in the Vietnam War, so we lived there for 3 years when I was in grade school. I was old enough to remember it, so.
Yeah. Let's see, I'm reading here that you participated in the Moth.
Well, the Moth, there's a number of literary enterprises called the Moth, including the Moth Radio Hour, the storytelling project. The moth that I was a participant in was a literary magazine published out of Ireland, and I won a poetry prize that was pretty exciting.
Okay. Yeah.
In Ireland, so yeah, I got to go there. And
oh,
read
that's
it.
Great. That's
in
great.
Dublin.
Yeah. Several things. I was thinking maybe you'd been on the Moth Radio Hour, which, you know, the public radio guy. That's it's going to be more prestigious than the journal. You probably have an opposite point of view. The Moth Journal is more prestigious, but let me turn to Daniel Dabrowski. Get a little bit of your background. I'm pulled this up here.
I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Charlottesville, Virginia. Yes, yes.
Yes.
So how do you get from there to Cedar City? You're an associate professor of English and creative writing at Southern Utah University.
It's a story that actually my book that poetry called Drift Migration. The title kind of is exemplary a little bit of my own experience. So I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia. My father died of a heart attack when I was a freshman in college. And my mother, both my parents had grown up in Provo. So my mother wanted to move back to Utah after my father passed. And so 2 years later, she bought a house in St. George. And this was in the very early, like mid-80s. And Bloomington had just begun to have a few small houses. So anyway, it was a very stark contrast to go from Charlottesville to St. George. And even though I was still in college, I'd spend my summers there in St. George. And so drift migration is kind of this, it's a term that refers to a flock of birds or a bird that is blown off course unexpectedly. So I kind of felt like my life at that point was blown off course. Mm-hmm. And then that informed my poetry.
Yeah. You direct an eco poetry and place writing conference.
Yeah, so and that was a title that was given to it previously, but it is still it's a creative writing conference that I started in the fall. It began as an education conference for educators and creative writers, and now it is a creative writing conference where we bring writers here to campus and we do some walking writing workshops from some local places and also offer multi-genre creative writing workshops and readings with our visiting writers. And we tie in with terrain.org, which is a multi-genre online journal that features many writers that write about the environment as well.
Yeah. This one stood out to me from your bio. You're former poetry editor for the Contemporary Rural Social Work Journal. That's a surprising place for poetry for me. Maybe not for you, I guess.
Well, it was a new thing. It was an innovative approach that they asked me to do this because I'd already worked on some curriculum and developed a curriculum for poetry therapy in groups. So I did some presentations for the Rural Caucus Social Work for groups, and then they asked me if I would be a poetry editor for their Journal of Contemporary Rural Social Work, and so these were poems by social workers about their experience. And then from my sense of a professional poet, there were also poetic techniques that I was looking for in terms of editing those collections.
Also from your bio here, you developed a curriculum of poetry writing exercises to be used in poetry therapy groups. Again, forgive my ignorance, I didn't know there was poetry therapy.
Yes. In fact, there's been a program called the National Poetry Therapy Association that has been out for a long time, or National Association of Poetry Therapy, and they have a journal. And I collaborated with a psychologist and a counselor and a women's group coordinator, and we collaborated on this curriculum on co-facilitation for poetry therapy. And so that was part of what I was doing with that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I want to return with each of you, kind of get a collective discussion about writing in place, right? And you, Daniel Dabrowski, you have led writing workshops through the national parks. Maybe get back to that. Let me turn to Olivia Dunning Rodriguez. You describe yourself on your website as ruralist, poet, and celebrant. That's interesting. Tell me about each of those.
First of all, I'm delighted with that question. No one notices that little part of my website, so thank you. I have been working in various kinds of writing spaces for a while, and what I noticed is, especially in the early years, I felt this this I don't know, maybe not resistance necessarily, but like nervousness to put on the capital W writer at the very beginning of my experience in writing spaces. And so if I didn't feel like I could name myself writer immediately, I wanted to dig a little deeper to figure out what are the titles I wish I could claim. And rural spaces and rural communities have always been a place of deep devotion for me. I grew up in Appalachia. I grew up in southern Ohio and have migrated similarly to Danielle to southeastern Utah, which in many ways has similarities to Appalachia. Every time my folks visit, they're surprised. How did you find a place with so many similarities to southeastern Ohio? I have this love for rural areas, and I also think that if I were to summarize, what I hope some of my poetry does is the work of celebration. I think it is an underutilized tool of building community and really naming what is valuable to us.
You say your work centers on the stories, identities, and inheritances of rural places. So that rural focus, right? Yeah. Well, it's a episode on poetry. Let's hear some poetry. Let me start with Lisa Bickmore. What are you going to read for us first?
I have a fairly recent poem, and it is set in Joshua Tree, is a place I've come to love. And it focuses on the way Joshua trees get pollinated, not by bees, but by moths. Anyway, I'll read this poem. It's called Inflorescence. That year we went at dusk to see a clarifying light between tree and tree, a superbloom sliding between experience and fact, light firing the empty panicles. For a long moment, I felt sure of the flower, a story the husk was telling of itself. Now I know it as a kind of moonflower unfurling among its bayonet branches, its clench loosening into a musk, its nectarlessness open to the yucca moth, visiting only at night. In the dream, I can almost hear her, my living sister, her feet bare, her smile a welcome. It had snowed a June afternoon. I woke wanting to tell her how it petaled down. A year since, I am still hauling pollen, sticky flower to flower, a helix unfolding its small hands.
Beautiful. Tell me the title again.
Inflorescence.
All
I should
right.
have looked it up before we talked because every time I need to remind myself exactly what it means.
Wonderful. Inflorescence. Yeah. Let's turn to Danielle Dabrowski. Could you read us a poem?
Thank you. Yes, in light of the mention of dusk and trees, I'm going to read a poem called Vespers in the Great Basin. And in January, there we go to an old ranch that eagles at night come in to roost. And so this is a poem about that particular image of that happening. Vespers in the Great Basin. Bald eagles gather among the elms with soft whistles as they glide over snowfields of thistle and jackrabbits, settle on branches, umber wings folded against their bodies, albino heads tucked from the wind. Each winter, we watch them fly across the valley to this empty ranch, stretch their wingspan beyond 6 feet, their darkness growing in sunset until Venus appears in the west. Driving home, your right hand fumbles with my fingers as if with a rosary, while you keep the wheel in check. Out the window, I see a brown quarter horse lean against a fenced in snow, haunches turned to the wind. Our silence meets the coldness that blows in through door jams, the chimney. Next January, when mountain peaks glisten beneath miters of ice, will return to the elms as eagles gather across the river and the riven valley. They'll hunch together on racked branches of winter trees, believing they can always keep the cold at bay.
Excuse me, Tubbit. the title again, sorry.
Oh, the title, it's Vespers in the Great Basin.
Just getting over a cold here, so it's getting to be here. In fact, let's go to a break. I'll get my voice under control here. You're listening to Access Utah.
This episode of Access Utah was first broadcast the beginning of this year in January.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah and bearing with me through that that episode. Hopefully you won't repeat that. We're talking about poetry on the program today. And we're talking with Lisa Bickmore, who is Professor Emeritus of English at Salt Lake Community College, also Poet Laureate of Utah. Danielle Dabrowski is an Associate Professor of English and Creative Writing at Southern Utah University. And Olivia Dunning Rodriguez is Program Coordinator at the Rural Tech Initiative at USU Eastern. She's Poet Laureate of Helper. So let me, that was beautiful, Danielle. Tell me again the title.
Vespers in the Great Basin.
Yeah, wonderful. Let's turn to Olivia Dunning Rodriguez. Share a poem with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tom. So one of the gifts I think poetry offers me is the opportunity to reimagine. And this poem I'm about to share is a generous, for me, reimagining of what the future could be while in conversation with the kin and family that I come from in Appalachia. So this poem is called Overgrown, the Future. Good morning from the future, beloved. Before there was the deep Ohio, who mothered my kin on the north side. My grandmother whispered prayers into cupfuls before swallowing, hummed over steam, stirring, singing into it, slipped the skin off of anything with the knife pointed toward herself, could coax a party out of hunger and boredom and grief. My grandfather waited for rainfall, named the thunder a celestial bowling league, a taste for godly making, thus a garden. Broke the ground with empty hands and watched the earth make good when it could and when it couldn't. Now in daylight, the state line between garden and wilderness is broken. Church bells move on their own accord. Whatever wants to grows here and then some. I wish she could see it now, overbloomed. The green can swallow the folly we left around with caress and reinvention. They let me learn about ease.
Wonderful. Tell me the title again, that one.
Yeah, this is called Overgrown, the Future.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the similarities that your parents at least see between Eastern Ohio, Southeastern Ohio, and Carbon County.
Absolutely. Both areas are coal communities. Both areas were really mapped by railroads and incredibly dedicated, I would say, creative survivors of really hard work. I think they are oftentimes impressed in of different kinds of stark beauty. I think Appalachia has its own kind of beauty, and certainly southeastern Utah is a love story I'll never get over. It's so beautiful out here.
Yeah, it is. It is beautiful, beautiful place. I wanted to talk, go around the panel here and talk about writing in place, right? Writing for place, writing in the wild. All of you have, you know, a lot of different subjects for your poems, but I think each of you has done at least some of that. Let me start with Lisa Bickmore. What does that do? For your writing, I guess, a special challenge, I guess, an opportunity.
I'll just start by saying that I think one of the things poetry does best or can do is to direct attention and to focus attention. I think that's true for the poet, but I also think it's true for the reader and hearer of poems. There's the opportunity when you're in the space of reading or hearing a poem to undivide your attention so that it can become more powerful. And I think attention is precursor to love. And so loving a place means paying attention to it. I've learned this a lot by working with the poets who have been focusing their energies around saving the Great Salt Lake. I will confess that when I first came in touch with these writers, nominally led and maybe more than nominally, definitely more than nominally by Nancy Moore, that they were paying attention in ways that I was like, oh, I'm learning about the place that I live from these poets, some of whom were much newer to poetry than I was, but they were turning their love and attention on the lake and what was happening with the lake and loving the lake. That is the other piece of it. So for me, the opportunity is as a poet is to learn to love the place I live more and to be thereby a part of the community that helps to save it, to save the place that I love.
Yeah, beautifully said. I love that. I love that phrase, undivide your attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah. that's what poetry can do, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me direct that to Daniel Dabrowski. Do you agree? Poetry undivides your attention. Lisa McMoore also mentioned love and attention as being related.
And I think that is a great term, undivide your attention. You really have to think about that. I think that poetry, to me, it has a kind of lightning speed ability to take you someplace very quickly within those words. So within just listening to a few lines, suddenly you're with the moonflower, you're at the Joshua tree, or you're at the river in eastern Ohio. And that is that way of undividing the attention. And there is a love that happens because there's so much time that you have to spend paring things down to get to the point that you want to make about that place or that experience, that image. That is a lot of love. Poets know what it's like to spend hours on one line. That's a lot of attention and love. We may not have a lot of attention for some other things, but we definitely have it for those moments of those, crafting that line and paring that down. Mm. So yeah, I think, and then the reading of poetry, I think it's a way to also create that focus when you've got a lot of things that are calling for your attention in various ways. It's a way to calm and bring what does a reader love when they begin to read someone else's poem? It brings up their places that they love. And that's what I think is also exciting about it as well.
Yeah. I have the advantage here of Zoom, which is a newish technology. So I noticed, Danielle Dabrowski, when you were talking about that crafting, spending hours crafting one line, Lisa Bickmore was nodding her head. I want to turn to you, Lisa. I guess first of all that love and attention, right, on the language. Then you're probably thinking about what you, or maybe you're not thinking about what you want the hearer of that poem to experience.
Yeah, I know poets who say they never think about the reader, and I'm like, how? I don't understand that. I mean, I think there are parts of the poetry making process where you are thinking less about how a poem will be received and more about like the part that where you're discovering what you want to say and how you want to say it. And I think that's to me the unending joy of writing is that part, that discovery. And it is hard work, as Danielle said. You know, there's no like shortcut to it. You have to try the words on. For me, that my process now is to write more than I need, take away plenty of things, then let my writing group tell me that I have taken away too much and figure out how I need to reshape the poem to open it up a little more. But like, yeah, that I've sort of forgotten your question, Tom.
that connection with the reader or the audience, I guess, yes, is what I was getting at.
Yeah. No, as the poem is coming into focus, I do think about how a reader will experience any number of things, from the sort of micro level of a reference, you know, in the poem, you know, whatever knowledge the reader might or might not be able to or need to bring to bear on a poem in order to sort of stay with it. I think about that. I think about the reader's pleasure. I want the reader to feel like moved, but also Olivia talked about, I think this was during the break, the deliciousness of poems. And I want my readers, no matter what the subject matter of the poem is, to find something that sort of ignites for them into pleasure, and with a capacious definition of what pleasure is.
Mm-hmm. Olivia Dunning Rodriguez, tell me about your experience in a poetry community. You're, you know, as a writer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sure you consume poems as well. Different experiences both ways, or is it kind of a similar overall experience?
You know, that's a great question. I think that definitely in a really great poetry community, it can feel very potluck, which is fantastic to bring something to the table and be well fed at that same table by other offerings. I think that really one of the many, and maybe I'll keep saying this, but one of the many gifts of poetry is this liminal place we can gather in a poem. Mm-hmm. We can be together in a poem. I think poetry for me really gifts me with belonging to what I care about. And, you know, I love to write poetry, but I mean, similar to Lisa, I think about who might be in the front row of my audience. I want them to feel seen oftentimes in the things that I'm writing and thinking about.
Yeah, beautifully said. Well, let's hear some more poems. Let's start again with Lisa Bickmore.
Okay. Let me read this poem called Borrowed Tune. And that's actually the title of a Neil Young song on Tonight's the Night, the album. This will date me. It came out in the 70s. Borrowed Tune, and it has an epigraph from Neil Young: "Too wasted to write my own. There is a music of engines and rain, derived and derived again, tires on a road after dark, the train hurtles along I-10. I see it before I see him, dim figure at the roadside waiting for a break in the breath and whine of cars. My voice entered a song when last I was that transient, ready vagabond if the traffic would slow, to catch a ride anywhere. There is a thread attached to his heart. I pull patiently, steadily, to hear it again. Even then I knew I'd borrow this tune over and over. Just dark desert, a train, just lightning inscribing runes on the sky, highway lines etched in broken streaks of blue. It is older than my memory, but I use it anyway, driving or running, in the kitchen paring vegetables for a soup. I whistle the tune and cut myself, my thumb instead of an onion. The blood rushes along old wild roads without my effort."
Oh, beautiful. Tell me the title again of that one.
Borrowed Tune.
Borrowed Tune. So that's I guess, you know, poetry comes from anywhere in your world, right? In this case, some music,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, music and driving on I-10 down to Tucson, and a line from Sylvia Plath, My Thumb Instead of an Onion, which she was talking about. I think the poem's called Cut. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel Dabrowski, what do you read for us next?
I'm going to actually read a very new poem that was just published in Sugar House Review. Just do a shout out to them for their Sweet 16 issue. It's a poem that I wrote after years of helping my mother, who had early onset dementia. And so it's a poem that, again, I crafted over the course of quite a few years, being at her house, at her kitchen, and just thinking about various things. There's two terms that are not as that are not very familiar. One is coscinomancy, which is an ancient form of soothsaying using a sieve and shears. And the other is coscuomantis, and that is an ancient diviner who used sieves in order to divine the future. Mm. So the title, again, I'll read the title because even I have to remember how I pronounce it in different times, but it's coscinomancy. The coscinomantis spun ancient sieves woven with horsehair or grass, chanted a spell to conjure a demon whisper from an invisible world, believing a cult breath swayed the vessel and revealed the future. Do the orange and green Tupperware colanders in my mother's cupboard have anything to do with divination? If I hold them between two fingers or suspend them from the jaws of open shears, twisting by a thread looped around the handles above the kitchen floor, will they answer my question of where the 91 years slipping through her mind will lead her? The sieve of Aristophanes sifts out composite numbers multiplied by 2 and 3 until only the primes stand out. My age of 59 does not fall through the mesh. Neither does a memory she repeats to me from 1941 about walking 10 blocks midday from school to eat dinner in the multi-brick pioneer home on 5th West in Provo. My grandmother, hair in a bun, wearing a house dress, apron, stockings, black shoes, sets a hot meal at the table with a bowl of fruit as her youngest fights with the older sisters for a place, grabs the last roll, and is out the door, 9 years old, jaunty, following paths to dances, college, marriage, children, travel, widowhood, until she now watches traffic out the window, returning over and over to that shadow of a noon hour, her mother's blue enameled colander draining plums in the porcelain sink.
Yeah, I don't think I can pronounce the title either. Would you tell us again? Yeah.
It is coscinomancy.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. That's Daniel Dabrowski. Well, Olivia Dunning Rodriguez, what do you read for us next?
Yeah, so this poem that I will read for you is the very first poem in my collection, Honey Wonder, which was part of Moon in the Rye Press, which is Lisa's Laureateship Press. I'm so lucky and grateful to be part of it. And so this is the first poem in that chapbook, and the title of my poem sits somewhere snug in this poem. So this poem is called Senescence, a Pulled Thread. And I also love the game of finding really fun, unique words. So senescence is the process of a cell's deterioration through age. So it loses its ability to divide and make new cells as you age. And so that's what senescence means. Senescence, a pulled thread. Every night before sleep, despite the doubts I have about this practice, I follow myself backwards, willing my smallest living to swallow themselves instead of budding twins, unbegetting daughter cells, shivering myself younger, until I know my body has become a time machine again, and then I embark. To the day I was made a married woman, further, to the years living in the side streets of small towns, no, exhale further. To the self driving west to Idaho at 18, bent on invention, keep going. Mm-hmm. I am a ripened woman. I am a young thing. I am a teenager. I am adolescent. I am a child. I am small. I am tiny. I am new. Here we are. We are beautiful. I'm holding the newness of her in the arms of a self that could finally be her mother. The air in the room is still, quiet. I sing to myself every night. I sing to her, little honey wonder, the insects are dancing.
Senescence, a pulled thread. I remember the title on that one. Yeah, beautiful. And that is Olivia Dunning Rodriguez. Well, let's take another break. Come back with the final segment with our poets. We're doing poetry for the new year. Talking with our Utah Poet Laureate, Lisa Bickmore, Daniel Dabrowski, who's Associate Professor of English and Creative Writing at Southern Utah University, and Olivia Dunning Rodriguez is Program Coordinator, Rural Tech Initiative, USU Eastern, and Poet Laureate of Helper. We'll have more following this break.
This episode of Access Utah was first broadcast the beginning of this year in January.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with three poets. Wonderful opportunity here. And we're talking with Utah Poet Laureate Lisa Bickmore, Daniel Dabrowski, Associate Professor of English and Creative Writing at Southern Utah University. Olivia Dunning Rodriguez is at USU Eastern. She's Poet Laureate of Helper. So I want to get to some more poems. First of all, I want to ask each of you, we'll start with Lisa Bickmore again. I think you each deal with students or have done, and workshops and such. People coming new to writing, and especially writing poetry. So I wonder, Lisa Bookmore, what do people find in that? What's the impulse, I think, I want to ask you, for yeah. people to come and say, hey, I want to write poetry?
Well, it's various. But I would say for younger people, my experience was that they often feel like they gravitate toward poetry as a place to express, like the whole notion of a genre that is, they as they understand it, devoted to allowing the expression of emotion. So I always felt like my job was to give them more means and opportunities to come at a poem in different ways, because I do look for an intensification of feeling when I read poems. I mean, that's at least one of the things I look for, but I also look for somebody who can, poems that can surprise me and that aren't, that don't do it all the same way. And I think, like, one of the most rewarding things is to see young poets take up different means for writing poetry and thereby, you know, get at those feelings, but not like, here's my feelings and they're still bleeding. I want you to also bleed with me. But I poets who can give me poems that that allow me access to those feelings, but also surprise me and give me other ways in. That's what I think is most valuable about studying poetry. And I'm excited always when I get to work with young poets to see how they come at that and to nudge them in some possible different directions.
Yeah. Let me turn next to Olivia Dudding Rodriguez on that. You were nodding your head at some things that Lisa Bickmore was saying. I'll just ask you the same question. What are the folks that you encounter, what are they looking for, do you think?
Yeah. Going back to my series called Gifts That Poetry Offer Me, I think one of the things that poetry can do is evidence make. I think that, you know, when I was working on my chapbook with Lisa, my original hope for my title would be Heirloom. I wanted to create poems that I could offer those who might come after me or might belong to my community. And I think investing in the skill of evidence making, I'm really in agreement with Lisa that, you know, there are so many ways to let the things that we feel and experience be windows, as opposed to sometimes uncomfortable living rooms, you know. And so I really think that the investment in that process of being able to not only name and sit with things that you are experiencing or feel, but to make something new out of them is something that will serve you your whole life. You know, January, I'll just say this briefly, January is, you know, you start taking spin classes because it's a new year, right? And I think there's nothing better for your mind and your heart than a poetry class, which I think is like an internal spin class.
Oh, good. Yeah. You'd advocate go to a internal spin class, but stick with it, right? The gyms are empty again by February, right?
That's
Yeah.
right. That's right.
So, Danielle Dabrowski, do you agree with what your colleagues here have said? And then I want you maybe, first of all, that, and then maybe connect this to poetry therapy. Seems
To put
like, yeah.
Yeah, actually, there is a really good connection there because when I'm teaching poetry for intermediate poetry students, well, it's a class that's required for all creative writers, and so they don't often sometimes they haven't written poetry, and there is a sense of fear of poetry. There can be a little bit of trepidation, and what I try to have them understand at some point is that when they begin to listen to when they begin to arrange words in these poems, no one else has arranged those words like that before. And if they also listen to the patterns of their speech, they listen to the sound, they listen again to those lines, they begin to realize that they have had this with them all the time. And that is one thing I do feel like that we are connected, that poetry is a sort of innate with us because we have it's a connection to our language. We have a very intimate connection to our words, our language, how we speak. And when we're able to put those into poems, in a way it's corralling some of this, maybe the mental chaos or the spin class, the way of shaping that. It's the more that you do that, the more you become aware of not just how you use language, but maybe how you see the world, how you understand the world. And it's a way to also with the poetry therapy curriculum that I co-coded that I developed with these other professionals, our focus was on developing inner strengths. So the poetry would be a be this is what you created, and this is what we're hearing in your work, in what you've put together. And so that created kind of a natural awareness on this the part of the person that they didn't know that was there before, but it was there. And now they see it. And it's just a again a way to make a connection with themselves, but also with the idea of community. When you're sharing that with community, you begin to hear all these voices. And one of my favorite times in my poetry class at the end of the semester, I ask my students, just are we going to hear one line, your favorite line from a poem? And everybody says their line. And my gosh, it's as good to me as listening to any kind of symphony, because what a power to come through.
Yeah, that does sound powerful. Well, we're approaching the end of the program. I want to hear some more poems. I think we have time for, short-ish poem from each of you. I'll start with Lisa Bickford again.
Okay, so this poem is called On the Skids. On the skids, that's how I describe it to myself, the wrecked body I wear, the ruin I affect as style. You know how the beautiful's a symbol of the good, or so some thinker might have it, which explains how it is that I find you putting on your trousers, nonetheless, so utterly sublime. To be honest, most days as I find myself crying in the car again, I imagine little else but the grief, destiny of everything. Here, the classics can be useful, as when Aeneas tells his friends, shipwrecked, starving, having lost almost all but surviving it, perhaps one day you'll delight even in remembering this. Or David Johansen strolling into the session, addict, harrowed by too much rehab, wearing sunglasses, skinny as the cigarette he smokes, but still standing. Having dodged death and seizing one more chance to play, to say, take a good look at my good looks, then close your eyes. One more chance to add lines to the doomed canzone, to try a new recipe for my son, who'll soon be gone. One more garden to neglect. One more surprising rogue geranium springing pink-flowered in the lawn. One more spate of tears and then another. This body, one day I will think of it as the last, beautiful, the late, gladdening, the former sleeping naked in summer and the previous dreaming of spring. And you, in your trousers, turning to sea.
On the Skids, it's Lisa Bickmore. Thank you. Daniel Dabrowski, another final poem from you.
Yes, this one is called Evensong. Sunbeams scatter through oxygen and nitrogen, bending frequencies into a band of blue, gray, and white, swallowed by waves of nautical twilight, the moment Venus appears next to Algol, the demon star, and Lambda, astral boat lights floating on the January horizon. I fly over arteries of lights in a Brasilia, tilt to one side along the Buckhorn Flats. Home is scattered, red cliffs to the east, a dry basin to the west, and in between, a town of three exits where I have lived out the same day for 30 years. A glossy magazine promises vacations to Denmark, Bali, Alaska, where oceans beat the shores with breakers from our first breaths before our lidless eyes could no longer see through water. At a wind gap, symbols on rock carved by Fremont Indians tell of the equinox, rain, a journey, a woman giving birth. Cirrus clouds over the Pine Valley Range must mean thunderheads building in Nevada. They should reach us by tomorrow night.
Evensong, the title of the poem? Yeah. That's Daniel Dabrowski. Let's turn to Olivia Dudding Rodriguez. What a final poem from you?
Yes, I'll leave you with a love poem. This is called Pioneer Weekend. 4 days, we were stranded in Winnemucca, Nevada, with a cracked radiator during the only weekend that something happens there, a car show. We carried our suitcases for blocks and played handcarts on Pioneer Weekend, walking in the dark. We ate breakfast in an empty casino at 4 a.m., then wandered through small, empty museums, the taxidermied ne'er-do-wells from the backcountry casting eyes at us. And of course, it all went on your credit card. I couldn't have known. I was writing the recipe to falling in love, slowly, like slipping off of a raft into still water at a hotel pool. It was not what I had imagined, a wandering of 5,000 miles. And then 5,000 more, our names left in a typewriter in an antique shop, to become the weary bones that look out from the wilderness and then soften. This must be the place.
Pioneer Weekend. That's Olivia Dudding Rodriguez. Thank you so much. Well, reached the end of our time here. We really enjoyed the discussion and the poems. We've been talking with Lisa Bickmore, who's Professor Emeritus of English at Salt Lake Community College, and she's Utah's Poet Laureate. Lisa Bickmore, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We've also been talking with Daniel Dabrowski, who's Associate Professor of English and Creative Writing at Southern Utah University. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful.
Thank you. And we've had with us Olivia Dudding Rodriguez, who's Program Coordinator at the Rural Tech Initiative at USU Eastern and Poet Laureate of Helper. Danielle, thank you. Or Olivia, thank you.
Absolutely. What a pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. And go read some poetry. Go write some poetry, I guess, as well. That internal spinning class that Olivia was talking about, I think would do us all some good. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.